Welcome to the Mayo Fashion Magic in Action podcast. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Joanne.
And what's the question for this week? Well, we do a weekly live coaching call with all the participants in our course, and we do some pretty cool coaching and some fabulous questions and excitement because everybody's sharing the difference they're making with the work. And oh, I can't even tell you, but one of the biggest impacts, I think, if we get straight in there, Paul, is walking.
Yes.
We have a lot of questions about walking because a lot of the micro movements that we teach and the sequences that we work with are really based in this so-called very ordinary aspect of our lives. I know a lot of people make sure they get a daily walk, especially if you've got a dog, you know, your daily walk is your thing. It's your exercise. But I think it's part of a story of everyday life that's really quite extraordinary. And I remember the big impact that I first noticed when I was teaching yoga every week. And I remember my dad was in my class and he was about 87 by then. He told me when he was 75 that he was hanging up his walking boots because he was too old to exercise. I think I swore at him. I said something eloquent like, you know, bollocks, there's no way you're too old to walk and move. So come to my yoga class. And he was all very, well, I don't do yoga. I'm an athlete. I play football and all this sort of thing. And I said, well, come anyway. And because, you know, he adored me and knew that he would have fun because he was going to sit there taking the mickey out of me. He ended up absolutely loving it. But what was so extraordinary was that the micro movements that we worked with was that one day he came home literally covered from head to foot in mud. He was 87. He'd taken my mad Irish setter for a walk, or she'd taken him for a walk. And he was covered from head to foot in mud. And I was like, oh my God, Dad, have you had a fall? Shall I call an ambulance? What shall I do? And he's laughing his head off. And he said, no, I bounced. And I said, what do you mean you bounced? He said, I bounced. I went head over heels and I bounced. And he was laughing. He thought it was so funny. He hadn't hurt a single part of him anywhere. He just was so delighted and chuffed with himself that he'd walked there, fallen, walked back, and was happy and bright to tell the story. You know, the big problem was getting his coat clean. And I was like, there's magic in this. There really is. And that was like the early days of me having many such stories. And I think one of our live coaching calls that really fascinated me, we were talking about the Ministry of Silly Walks. Isn't it a Monty Python
sketch?
That's right. And we talk about how different animals, you know, I know we've looked at different animals' gait, like the bear's ipsilateral gait and the waddling of a penguin and how cats walk and how gazelles walk and all these different types of walks. And I just wanted to kind of prompt you to tell the story of your time in the RAF and kind of what we do with walking, the magic of it in this work.
I'd love to. And we don't get told how to walk, do we, from a young age? We just get told to get up or encouraged to move around. And the sooner
we discover walking.
Yeah,
we discover it.
Well,
yeah.
we discover walking by learning to fall over a lot or accepting that we fall a lot when we're early, right? And those developmental years are really fun. And the moment you can walk and you can move around, you're told to sit down and be quiet. It's like crazy, isn't it? Get up. Yeah. Where's your first word? Now you can talk and you can move. Sit down and be quiet. That was the old days, right? In the 70s. And I'm sure it was that before. But so my experience as a young guy was to stay out of the house as often as I could because it was more fun. We didn't have the computers those days, certainly didn't have a phone, and we were out playing and being physical.
You went out in the morning and you came back when it was dark.
Well,
right?
I came back when I was hungry and because nobody else was going to feed me. And I'd come back and my mum would have dinner for me and slap me and say, where have you been? And it was her that kicked me out. But anyway, because of that sort of background where I come from, I wasn't very academic. So I was never going to go into one of those IT jobs or in the city because that wasn't my thing. I really just enjoyed being outside and being active. And I'd always done martial arts since a young age and all sports. So I joined the forces because it gave me an exciting view into the world that I didn't know existed, but I'd heard about it. And it was a real nice avenue for a lot of us up in the north part of England. And it was one of the best things I ever did. I joined very early, 16 and a half, in the Royal Marine Commandos. Oh my God, what a shock to my system, because this is like the elite of the world fighting forces. And I got accepted to start the training. I didn't succeed. Because I got injured very early because the training was brilliant However, my body was growing at different rates, so it pulled itself apart because I was loving it. It was exactly like a boy dream. We were just playing in mud a lot, which is what I did every day. My mum told me, get out, play in mud. I did. A composite play in the mud, I did. And I was loving it with all the people you meet who are like-minded. We're all young, silly men trying to become these elite soldiers. But really, we're just having fun in the mud. But I got really seriously injured in my left knee. My muscular tissue, I now know it to be myofascial. I didn't know at the time, I was a 16 and a half. Literally was tearing itself off the bone. But they noticed and they pulled me out. And what noticed is because during that training period, they wanted us to know how to run together as a group. So it's one thing running around and you all get told to go from A to B. But in the early times, you just scatter. You just scatter like cats running around. And you're going in a similar direction, but you're not going in a uniform way. And the idea is that they uniform you so that you all arrive at the right time to wherever you've got to get from A to B. And once you get there, that you can then function as a group. So earlier, teamwork, you work as a group, as a team. You arrive together, you work together, and you have fun together. So what they do, because we're all different shapes and sizes, certainly different fitness levels, but they try to get you to uniform so you all support each other's strengths and weaknesses. So as the shortest person in a group of 60, they put all the little guys at the back first so that people appreciate it. And off you go, you do your running, and they send you all these little runs, and it could be 1 mile, it could be 5 miles, it could be forever, like it feels like the whole day. And they call it speed marching, where you walk very fast, then you run a period, and then you walk very fast again. And it's almost like interval motions of your leg. And what happened was early on, you realize the little people that got at the back do not have the same stride length as the guys at the front. So the big guys are off, they've gone, they've left you. And all of a sudden, you're on your own almost. Because no matter how determined you are, I'm 5 foot nothing, and somebody who's 6 foot plus has left me behind, and we're meant to be on the same side.
Yeah.
So.
Well, stride length alone.
Correct. It's just nothing I can do about it, right? So he's walking, just really nice pace, and I'm running. So I'm absolutely exhausted, and so are with all the other little smurfs, all the other little people. We're dying. And we're like, this is just not a fair exercise. However, what it did, it made us realize where we needed to be within the organization of our group, our particular group. And this goes for all groups. So they say, oh, I'm now put at the front. So now I'm at the front. So I'm the tiniest person with the other tiny people. And what we do, we have to set the pace so that we all arrive in a timely fashion, so that we're not too slow, that the big guys run over us, and we're not too fast that we're running, that there's this lovely rhythm. And it's brilliant. It's called rhythmic speed marching. And you have to learn how to do it. But once you do, it's how you retain the spring in your step. And everything is effortless. It becomes absolutely effortless. And then you get into a rhythm, and you'll heard it. I'm sure lots of people have heard the old soldiers on telly going left, right, like they do when they march. This is why they teach you to march.
So that you like can, the rhythm that actually can bring a bridge down because it's so syncopated.
Exactly. Yeah. And now you've got a whole group of people doing it at the same time. And the conductor is the PTI, the physical training instructor. And he's shouting out left, right, left, right, left, right. And it's brilliant. It's great to be a part of. But you start to learn then cadence. You start to learn rhythm. You start to learn how to change tempos without fatiguing yourself. And you're almost giving yourself a recovery in the middle of the high intensities. It is a remarkable way to train. However, bodies don't grow at the same rate. And mine, unfortunately, after 12 weeks of this, of a 30-week course, my body said, we can't do this anymore. And they could see, and they pulled people out and said, you're not ready. You need to go finish growing and come back. But my damage was so bad, it took me 2.5 years to be able to move really good, and I got as fit as I possibly could, that when I went to join again, that was not an option. They said, your knee will not tolerate another year of high intensity. However, it will tolerate the military, so please come in because we'd love your type of character. So I joined the Royal Air Force, and I had the greatest life there. It was a lot more fun than I expected it to be. And in there, I excelled because I trained to get back in the Marines. But when I was in the Royal Air Force, there's a different level of fitness requirement, and I've aimed for the highest, and you only need about halfway. So now I have this ability to create this effortless rhythm because it's what I was expecting to do and expecting to be part of, and I just didn't get tired at all for the 6 weeks training. It was impossible to get tired because there wasn't the same intensity. However, I was able to help everybody else that didn't know how to do it with other colleagues, and we were able to bring the whole group through, even some of the more weaker on the fitness spectrum. We kept them with us, and we looked after our colleagues. And it's where I really learned the value of walking. Because everybody's in such a rush to run. But if you know how to walk and you know how to manage your foot, that is often in it cocooned in the worst boots or the shoe. Women now have stiletto heels. Flip flops are like an epidemic here in the Middle East.
Sliders are actually worse. Don't talk about sliders.
Correct.
Anyway, we'll have another conversation.
But now we understand the value of the foot. And often now I'm in this rehabilitation world that I live in. The first thing I do is, how is your walk? Can you move? And the first thing that goes when they have a neck or a back or a shoulder or a hip issue is, I don't walk very much. I've changed how I walk to manage this other victim, which they consider to be their injury. And I always look at their body and go, well, where you're in pain is the victim of how you move all of you. This has become the outcome. And this was the where your body leaked the energy because it wasn't able to be efficient in your walking.
Don't you also think there's a fashion aspect of this that I know we've talked about before, is that the idea, for example, of being fashionable and doing your yoga or your Pilates particularly, or your dance, that in order to do it really well or to present yourself really well as being fit, you must have flat abs and you must be lean and you must have the right balance of muscular mass and all this story.
Yep.
And yet I find myself seeing people who consider themselves super fit, who could probably make me look like a complete idiot in the gym. But when they're walking, their whole torso is so tight and taut that there's no rotation. There's this, I call it walking like an ironing board with knees. And I'm not being rude, but I know how much energy that walk is costing them. And what we're seeking here is true elasticity, which, again, another thing many people misunderstand. True elasticity is free energy storage capacity, which is quite a mouthful. But what it basically means is that if you're getting your training right, as opposed to long or difficult or intense, I just mean right, the right rhythm, the right cadence, the right qualities, you actually have a natural predisposition to recoil. And that recoil naturally stores energy because it's how we, long before we had any of the biomechanical metaphors or any other metaphors for that matter, that's how we naturally survived. Yes, we had to store energy. That's how the body's predisposed. And when we talk about it in Maya Fashion Magic in Action, one of the fundamentals we talk about is being able to create this exquisite spiral motion. Don't you find that very often you're taking something away rather than adding it on?
Yes, this is absolutely true. You have to take away the joy of intensity in straight lines and ask them to compromise their vision of what is a healthy motion. Because when you teach people, and this is what Myofascial Magic in Action is, it's our foundational secret, is if you can't rebound, you can't access recoil, which means you cannot release, which you'll struggle to restore, and then you can't refine. And they all go in this lovely rhythmic sequence that they integrate as one ultimately. Everybody's lost the first one. The vast majority of people that are training don't have the capacity to rebound and decelerate so that they can move efficiently forward. So there's no way to access the recoiling capacity of your tissue, which should be energy free. And then there's no way to release unnecessary patterns that are happening because they're hardwired to move our way. And then when you want to try to restore the quality of your motion and then refine it so it's exquisite and it lasts forever, then it all collapses and capitulates under intensity. What I found is really good, and because I'm from a martial arts background, bouncing for me is like bread and butter. I can do it for hours. I'm like skipping. It should be natural. And as you start to get that skip and that lovely bounce, your body self-organizes to enjoy it. What I found most of my clients, as they start to get a rhythmic bounce into their body and they ask it to self-organize, it defends itself and stops them.
And they've got so many reasons not to do it.
Yes. And it's, oh my God, it's so tiring. It's so hard on my calves. It's so hard on my back. My neck is
so... Well, that's because they don't know how to do it properly yet.
Correct. Yeah, so exactly. Once they're in it and you find them and you're persistent with encouraging them, and you can slow it down, you can change intensities, you can change platforms, you know, a variety of things to modify for their ability and capacity to do it just for a short period first. Maybe 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 3 minutes, an hour. We can go up to anything we want. But it's important that they realize the value, because once you lose the spring in your step, you're dragging your butt along the floor, basically.
Exactly. And I know we talk about the pelvic foot, which we'll save for another episode. Yes. But also, isn't it extraordinary? Because I've read so many books about proper walking gait and placing the heel first and placing this first and doing that and wearing shoes and not wearing shoes. And I mean, God knows the research on it is phenomenal. But all of this is based in the idea that we have joints that are separate and bones that are separate. And when you talk about the pelvic foot, which I think is just brilliant, because it animates this idea that everything that's happening in the foot is, of course, an extension of the sacrum, because that's where foot grew out from.
Yeah.
And that this harnessing these special and nuanced ways of spiraling, recoiling, and rebounding is just so profound. And it doesn't have to be huge and intense and 4 hours a day. And it doesn't have to be at the level that you were doing in the army. No. But when you think about it, if in your story you say that no matter what size, shape, race, color, creed, culture, fitness level, these 60 people were at, and you were all guys, right?
Yeah.
You had this ability when you worked as a team and let rhythm dominate the situation or underpin the situation, that it actually changed your walking style, your gait, your methodology. And that's what I think is such a key thing that I know we dedicate to bringing to the table in Myofascial Magic, because it's such a foundational way.
It has changed
makes such a difference.
It has changed me. I'm 53, and that happened when I was not quite 17. That's over 30 years ago.
And that injury was resolved as well, didn't it?
Yeah,
I don't suffer
it, but it has I have a certain limitation because there's a certain rotational inhibition that it doesn't like.
Yeah.
However, but I manage it and it doesn't inhibit me in any other way. But I walk at a certain pace now. Like my granny, who was 95 when she passed away, God bless her, walked every day, couldn't keep up with her. I mean, she was unbelievable, because once you learn to walk, it becomes effortless and you literally propel yourself around the world. But unfortunately, walking is now become inconvenient. It's almost something, oh my God, do I have to go to the shop? Oh my God, do I have to go to the gym?
Because look at the way some people walk.
I know.
Paul. If you look at the way they walk, I know I do it myself.
Yes.
When I'm really tired, I'm actually shuffling.
Correct.
I'm all but shuffling. And I see myself do it. I feel myself do it. And I'm going, come on, Joe, you know better. And then when you get that spring and you get that right rhythm and you get the other details that
It changes your mood. It changes your personality, your outlook.
That's what I wanted
you to say. That's what happens when you walk well. You look well. You move well. You respond well. You adapt well. You adapt in an appropriate way, in a timely fashion. Your senses are much more alert and agile and responsive. And you're aware of your environment better. But the fact
and you nourish yourself.
Well,
you nourish.
You're self-nourishing. Yeah, exactly. We self-heal because we have a rhythm in our body. And on that point about joints, which I think is such an important conversation, and we may elaborate bigger in another time. If they just take a look at any x-ray of their own body, and they can see this online if they don't have one of their own, but most people have had an x-ray of themselves, and they see these gaps between the bones. Well, we know, because of our studies, that they don't exist. They're virtual spaces. But when you shuffle, you encourage those virtual spaces to encroach on each other, and then they shear. And if they shear, they create inflammation. And inflammation stops you moving because the body's trying to defend you and heal you from the very style of movement you're doing. Whereas if you maintain those spaces, which requires bounce, then that means this creates a thing called dynamic tensioning, which means you have a rhythmic motion, almost like a jellyfish is moving through the water. It shouldn't look like it's collapsing and then stiffening. It should have a lovely natural rebound where you look like you're made of the most awesome fabric, like you're almost floating as you travel around the world.
Exactly. And this is what I think is also a little piece in this is, and yes, it is a bigger conversation for another time, but don't you find, and you've just said this really, people have an emotional response when they experience this.
Yes.
It's not just a lightness of step. It's a lightness of spirit.
Yes.
It's a lightness of mood. It's a lightness of ability. And there's this increased confidence that they can walk through the day.
Yes. I think it's important that when they're practicing that they walk with somebody who has a similar style at first. So for instance, if I walk with my partner, Maria, she's a fabulous dancer. She's the most rhythmic person in the world. But when she comes to walking, she's almost going backwards before she goes forward. So if I'm walking with her, I have to slow right down, changes my mood, because now I'm having to restrain myself from moving to stay at her pace. So if I'm going to the shop or we're going for dinner, that's okay, because I'm with my partner. But if I want to go for a walk, I need to unleash the restraints of somebody else's style so I can enjoy my own. And if I find somebody or a group of people that walk at a similar rate or a similar style, I might join them as company. But ultimately, walking is a very individual pursuit so that you can find your own rhythm and your own joy in walking. And I think that would be a real treat to most people that they're not aware of that. Instead of it being a traumatic event, oh my God, I have to go for a walk, it should be, oh wow, I get to walk. I'm going to go to the shop. I'm not letting the weather interrupt my opportunity. Like here in the Middle East, they use that a lot. And it's because it's 55 degrees. You're going to boil like a chicken if you go for a walk for three quarters of the year. However, they provide every environment in the world to go walking indoors. And they don't mind if you go to the mall and walk. Go for it. They're big enough to walk. And I think that's the big key for people, that they should embrace walking, because it is it's a free gift. And as a human being, it is the currency of being human and being able to move around your environment. We just take it for granted and we don't appreciate it until we can't walk. So the sooner you do myofascial magic in action and learn to access that natural rebound within you, you just forgot how to do it, and that you make it less traumatic and more resilient and durable, then you'll access the recoiling effect. Then there's a natural release of the inhibition that you've created, and now you'll have the freedom to restore, and your pattern will be better, and you refine it, and then it's yours for the rest of your life.
And a little note to those people who, unlike us, are not fortunate enough to be able to walk.
Yes.
I know the research that Serge Grachowiecki did that was so amazing was that even if you're sat in a wheelchair, it's possible to animate this particular rhythmical rotational movement of the spine.
Yes.
That's how the spine walks. And, you know, historically, we've treated the spine as a passenger moving along, held up by the legs, to quote Serge, when in actual fact, the spine is, he calls it the spinal engine. I have a thing about anything mechanical. I like to call it the spinal instrument, but definitely it's the key orchestrator of movement in the body. And I think that is perhaps one of the magical aspects of learning this rhythmical approach to movement.
Well, if we think of our spine like a snake, it's as spiraling as a snake. It can go in as much directions as a snake should be able to go. It should be vertical though and flow in any direction because it has to return to a vertical position. Whereas this column is more like a rigidity. And I think often people mistake stiffness as strength, when stiffness is often, if it's inappropriate stiffness, is often immobilization and become quite rigid and fixed. And to know that within those bones and those virtual spaces we've spoke about briefly between each of the bones of the spine, they should all counter-rotate just a little bit. Just like you're taking the lid off a bottle and you're twisting the lid in the opposite direction to the bottle. And that motion that occurs is what allows you to change direction. It's what allows you to interact with other people, what allows you to pick up objects. But because it's easier to keep everything contained and just pick it up in a straight line, that has become the norm for people. It's become the safe way to do things. And I think we've mistaken safety for inefficiency.
Because sometimes, I agree.
So, I mean, we always do things too safe in a way that there's no threat to you. Being a human and living, there's a threat to us all the time. That's what we call soft tissues, where we cut quite easily. Makes sense? And lifting things should be an art form. It shouldn't be so rigid. You see them doing these deadlifts and there's a thousand names to the various ways of lifting a bar. When are you going to lift something that heavy? I've never understood that we have to lift something so heavy and wonder why you're doing it so rigid, like you're almost like a Pinocchio rigid, but there's no freedom of any joint. It's just stiff to protect you in lifting. Whereas your spine should be able to round and extend and rotate whenever you're lifting anything that you're able to lift. And so my golden rule in walking and any of these movements to access the real rebound is whatever action you're doing, every bone in your body should have the capacity to move in any direction whilst under that intensity. Because if you feel unnatural constraint and the bones get locked and stuck, then it's got to take force inappropriately. and then you're invited dysfunction, limitation, and ultimately injury into your life.
Well, all hail to your work, and I know that you get incredible results for people, and it's just a very exciting thing to think about, is getting back something that's already there that I think a lot of us have worked out of our system, yes, lost touch with, forgotten,
yes,
and we want to kind of bring it back into its magic.
Yeah, because life has got too convenient, hasn't it? It's too convenient. Everything's
well,
at our doorstep.
We're sitting.
Everything's delivered now. In this city where I live, you can get you don't have to ever leave your home, ever.
You don't have to get out of the chair,
not
really.
Not at all. You sit and everything can be delivered to you. There's a million delivery bike riders coming to your home for food, for packages, for office work, for everything. And you miss the joy of the very things that you're sat on, your butt and your legs. And if you just stand up and instead of doing squats like a kangaroo, because I promise you, kangaroo have no interest in war because it's a kangaroo. And you just split your legs and just make them go forward and back. Look, I'm already doing it in the chair. You naturally create rotation. You can't help it because it's lovely. It's joyful. It's energetic. And it puts a smile on your face.
So even sitting can be used to train our beautiful, natural walking rhythm. And on that note,
of course,
thank you, Paul, as always. And looking forward to our next meeting in a couple of weeks. And everyone out there, please go to myofascialmagic.com and you can start the free training and have a call with me or Paul if you wish. It's not to sell you anything. It's just to share with you your work. And we really treasure the calls and we love the feedback that we get from everybody because that's what feeds the information that we put out there. So take care. God bless and keep walking.
Take care.